Welcome to Sabrina Artel's Trailer Talk. I'll bring you all kinds of stories from all kinds of people. Whether it's a live public conversation and we're speaking from the kitchen table of my 1965 Beeline travel trailer, from the studios or on the streets, please sit back and enjoy the conversation right here this time every week. Trailer Talks, the Marcellus Shale Water Project, is a combination of live events, sound pieces, radio broadcasts, home movies, and an evolving interactive website that you're welcome to participate in. We're exploring the impact of natural gas drilling on New York's water resources and the issues being debated in our neighborhoods throughout the country and globally. What is guiding people's decisions about whether or not to lease their land for gas drilling? And at what point do the rights of the individual diminish in the face of the health of an entire area? What role does water itself have on the ability for an area to survive by providing for itself? What impact is this having not only on the communities in the shale regions, but also on the national dialogue and policy-making decisions around energy extraction? What defines the American dream, and how does it impact the decisions being made in our communities? Trailer Talk's Marcellus Shale Water Project explores the impact of natural gas drilling in our neighborhoods. Local culture, generations of history, and beloved homes can be lost when the oil and gas companies, intent on fossil fuel extraction, move into a new region. We're facing a complete shift in our region as this largest ever concentration of gas lies in wait beneath our feet. Please go to www.trailertalk.net and talk to us. I spoke with filmmaker and theater director Josh Fox at a screening of his film, Gasland, in Calicoon, New York, on September 5th, 2010. The event was hosted by Catskill Citizens for Safe Energy. Among many awards and being at the forefront of the movement to stop gas drilling, Gasland has been nominated for an Academy Award in the documentary film category.
Oh, I get a brownie too? Oh my God, those look really good.
Whether or not I get one.
What do you
Amazing
think?
One.
Here those you go.
Are the best. I've seen the pictures.
Of the brownies.
No, of the inside of this.
Oh,
this
well, look around, please.
Coolest place on earth. Right. Oh, wow, this brownie is amazing. This is the bitchinest trailer I've ever seen.
This is exciting.
With the mountain tones in the background, Josh Fox, artist, theater director, theater creator, and Gasland. Also, Gasland documentary film creator.
You promised me that we were going to sit here and talk about avant-garde theater.
That's right. We are. We're going to talk about avant-garde theater. We're not going to talk about gas drilling at all, even though we're here at the Rooftop Films series, and Gasland is touring, right?
Yeah,
it's a collaboration with Rooftop Films. We're here in Calicoon, New York. The Mountain Tones are playing in the background. They're just a fantastic community marching band.
They're great.
I know.
I love them. Wait,
fantastic.
They're right behind. I can just look open the curtain there. See, they are.
They're right there. I know. They're. Let's start with avant-garde theater, actually. I want to start with that because
it's our background. It's not my background. It's my foreground. But it's
exactly. It's our foreground, background, both of us. We have that in common.
We do.
And what led you? Well, first of all, that's okay.
This is the reveal of the band in the background. It feels like we're in a kind of a Godard movie.
Exactly. We're on a set. We're in a set. So yourself as a theater director and an artist, how does that connect to you taking the steps to make the film and to decide that you would take that kind of action?
I think what it did was, in the theater world in New York, my work is very political. It always has been. So when it came to, and I had just been starting to make films. You know, I made a film called Memorial Day, and it was actually about to premiere. It was in the final stages of post-production when we started to get these requests for leasing. So I had all the stuff. I had the same camera that you're shooting with right now in the house, you know. And so I think that it was the useful part of that is storytelling, you know.
Storytelling.
And my work in the theater is working with actors from all over the world and interviewing them and then building stories, plays out of their real life experiences. So in a way, there's like a kind of documentary process in the, I mean, it's very different than, they come out differently. I mean, I could interview somebody and then get something from that and then write a monologue for them, or like, their inner emotional life becomes the through line of mm-hmm. whatever that is. So it's a very different process. But there was this inquiry always in the theater work, which is that, well, what's happening to you right now? And that becoming like the life of the pieces, you know? So this is, in a way, like goes right into just interviewing people. Yes. And instead of, you know, making something out of those interviews that would be a narrative or fiction, it was actually just use the, you know what I mean? It was like actually a yes. step easier in a way.
Exactly. So in a way, the translation was more direct.
Yeah.
Right? It
oh,
was
of course.
Because it's their stories and then your... But what's interesting about that is this translation, though, onto film.
Yeah.
And as you say, I mean, that's documentary. It's mm-hmm. a kind of, we may think of that as a, would you say, more direct kind of narrative in a documentary film. But you're making choices, of course, in the editing
yeah.
room. And,
yeah.
and you had hundreds and hundreds of hours of
well,
interviews
and I think
and
in
footage.
Any of these, in both in terms of doing what I yeah. do in the theater, and then what, it is kind of hard to do this with a band in the background, isn't it?
I know it is.
Well, just bear with us. That you want to try to be as truthful as you possibly can be to what's happening in the world. You know what I mean? That's what we do in the theaters. We work on things that are the truth, and we put it
yes.
into a different form. And in terms of the film, you know, it was the way it happened in the film. You know, I mean, I'm sitting here trying to figure this all out, and then step by step, I'm getting more and more and more information, and then wind up in Congress. And so I think that what you're doing with a documentary interview is, if you're asking the right questions, I think, and the subject trusts you, you know, you're going to get some essential thing in that moment from them. You know,
mm-hmm.
they're going to speak in a way that shows you who they are. And I think that's what I'm after when I'm working with actors as a director, is to try to say, all right, well, this is the place to feel like you can express yourself. And so
yeah.
in as a documentary filmmaker, you want to enter into a place where you look somebody in the eye and you let them know that you're not, somehow, somewhere inside of you, I don't know, that you're not going to misrepresent them.
Yes.
That there's a trust there. And no matter what they say, you're not going to misrepresent what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody, and I've been on this tour across America showing the film, and we're showing it all the places where we filmed. So I think almost every subject in the film has come to the film so far and sat there and watched it with an audience and got up on stage.
What has that been like?
It's been great. I was very nervous whether or not they would like
imagine.
It, you know,
right, of course.
Because you never know. I mean, I kind of personally hate watching myself
mm-hmm.
on camera. I'm a director. It was really a crisis moment when Matt, the editor, said to me, no, you have to be in this. This is your story also. And I was like, okay. Because I had done the narrations, you know, and
yes.
I figured I'll just, you know, and the narrations were starting point just to kind of explain stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know. All right, well, how are we going to tell the story? All right, the first 10 minutes is, all right, this is the regulatory atmosphere. This is my entrance point. But actually, you know, the notion of actually being in the film was one that was really uncomfortable at first, and was Matt
right.
Saying, no, this is your story. You have to be the...
And it is very directly your story, because you have
yeah.
your family home across the river from
yeah.
Calicoon,
yeah.
Just a few miles from here in
yeah.
Pennsylvania. And you and your family got the letter, right,
mm-hmm.
to lease your land, and that's what started the journey.
Well, a bunch of different letters came to my dad. And he was sort of like, what is this? Go figure this out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then I... Actually, the place what set off all the alarm bells was right here in the Delaware Youth Center. May 3rd, 2008, I went to the Damascus Citizens meeting, which is why, you know, I'd heard all sorts of things. You'd heard both
right,
sides.
Of
You'd
course.
Heard, I hadn't heard both sides. I'd only heard, okay, you could make a lot of money. And then I had heard, you know, from NWPOA saying, don't lease because we can make you a lot more money. And... read all that stuff, and then
yeah.
some buddies of mine, one guy from Honesdale, another guy from Waymart, were like, we're going to this thing, we want to look into it. And I was like, all right. And I figured I'd get here and there would be like 12 people here, you know, like kind of worried about something.
Right.
I turned out there was 400 people in the room, and immediately already, when there was 400 people in the Delaware Youth Center, I was freaked out. I was like, well, what's going on really?
Right. Yeah.
What's really happening here? And then as the slides rolled and as the information came out, they were to Barbara. I've told Barbara this, so she's not gonna be mad. But it was the fact that, like, you know, she was off the mic. She was over here. She was over here. She was sort of giving some information. I sort of heard something about chemicals. I was like, what did she really say? I mean, you know, she's it was the first couple of presentations.
Yes.
So I went up there to kind of like say, well, what is this? Can you tell me more about this? Can I interview you? And then we had a 4.5 hour long interview, which isn't in the film, but I by the end of that, and then looking into, you know, things that going to Dimmick, you know.
Going to Dimmick, I have Craig and Julie Sautner's water outside the trailer, and they have brought more water now from the water buffalo. It's foaming, one version of it. You know, the other version is dark, dark brown.
Mm-hmm.
The jugs I have out there are yellow from their well, and I've been to Dimmick as well, and it's not unlike my experience as when I went to Cayford Mountain in West Virginia to the mountaintop removal region. Absolutely devastating to see what happens to a community, to people's homes, to their lives.
Well, I've just spent quite a bit of time out in West Virginia and Western Pennsylvania, which is coal country.
Yeah.
And those people are really, I wouldn't say used to, but they've been dealing with the coal industry destroying their lives for 100 years.
Exactly.
And they're as adamant about, you know, what the gas industry is doing as they were about the coal industry.
Because when I went to Cayford Mountain, West Virginia 2 years ago, it was just when we were hearing about natural gas drilling here. It was in the early months of us hearing about it in the Catskills in upstate New York. And I asked them, Larry Gibson and Ed Wiley and Jim Foster and Judy Bonds and all those people, I said, well, what do you think? Because we're being told this is a transition fuel. We're being told that we need to get off coal, which I agree with, and natural gas is the answer. And they said, absolutely not. Don't let us be used in this battle. So, you know, that was an eye-opener.
Yeah, and I talked with the director of Coal Country, this movie about coal, just 2 days ago.
Yeah.
And I said, well, what do you make of this natural gas industry using natural gas as this sort of clean, are you on their side? Do you want to use natural gas instead of coal? And she was like, absolutely not. She told me this amazing story. She had a 2,000-acre farm in West Virginia. It was her family's for 200 years or something. She was eighth generation. This was 2,000 acres in a farmhouse. Army Corps of Engineers took it as an eminent domain, paid her $150,000. And they kicked them off that property in 1977 to do coal mining. Now, in this year, Chesapeake Army Corps of Engineers has leased that land to Chesapeake Energy for $48 million a year. Now, they get nothing. They get nothing.
Right.
So, what we're talking about here is an industry, or you know, when you're looking at extractive energy, and so much of this comes across with coal, with natural gas, and with oil, natural gas is doing this big PR job to say, oh, we're not like those guys, but they're exactly like those guys.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's very frustrating because here it is the same story over and over again.
Right.
The story that happened in West Virginia, the story that happened with oil, that those practices are inherently contaminating.
Exactly.
Those practices are destructive to communities, to places. And yet, somehow natural gas is coming out here and saying, oh, well, we're different. And what's disturbing is that people are going for it.
Well, so do you?
And when there's so much evidence of how this works across the world, across America for hundreds of years, it's no different.
Well, absolutely. What are you learning? I mean, you began your quest, your journey, Gasland, the film, your movie came out of it.
Mm.
And also a network of people who now are in touch with you and a community that's building, that's fighting the natural gas drilling, as well as communities building that are for it. But what are you, how has it impacted you personally?
I'm seeking a format, aside from the film itself, right?
Yeah.
To express what I have learned.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm almost as edifying as the trip that made the film itself has been the trip to do the tour. I mean, since January, since Sundance, I think I've crisscrossed the country 9 times, and I've done it by land once, and I went across New York and back through Pennsylvania on a 3-week journey. And what I want to somehow try to encapsulate some of the poetry of what that is in another format, whether it's a book or something that I'm narrating or a radio program or whatever it is. But what's so clear is that there is this immense movement of people across America. Like, I've never seen anything like this before in my life. I mean, it's just out of control. There's thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people, I would imagine, in these places. And every town that we go to, we have huge crowds and three or five organizations working against this. And then even more disturbingly, lots and lots of people at each one of these stops that have said that this is our water's contaminated. Things are problematic. We have health problems. We have air problems. Right. We've been run over. We lost our land. We feel like we're not in control of our lives anymore. We don't have water. And that has made an unbelievable impression on me. And that's how I keep going. I mean, it's been exhausting. But what keeps me going is actually when I meet those people and feel this incredible sense of inspiration and how necessary it is to go out and talk to people and tell their stories.
Right, and I see Julie Sautner outside the windows of the trailer right now, a person whose life has been, really their lives have been taken from them, the life that they knew, and now they're in the fight to save their own lives, their community's life. So Josh, as you say this, we're also in the middle of this battle. I mean, I shouldn't even say it's the middle. We're in it. I mean, we're engaged.
It's hard to know if we're in the middle.
Yeah, we don't know where we are, you know, beginning, middle, or end. But in this debate over the safety, in trying to stop it, in allowing people's voices to be heard who have lost their air, who have lost their health, who have lost their homes. And as you say, there's so many people across this country that don't even know who to turn to, and they're not being listened to.
Yeah.
And the natural gas drilling has so adversely impacted their life. So
we sent out an email that said we were going into theaters, and can you please help? Because we don't have a huge PR budget or anything. We got an email a minute for 3 days. I mean, it was crazy. And that was sent out to our mailing list. But the response and people feeling the need to get the basic awareness across that this is not as the natural gas industry says it is. This is not going the way they say it's going. That's all just a lip service. That's all just PR. That's just clearly not telling people the whole story. And that when they come to an area, they take over that area, industrialize that area, and that area is never the same. And it can't be reversed. I mean, because you have pipelines everywhere, you have gas wells everywhere, you have condensate tanks everywhere, and you have this sense of a takeover. And that's what happens to those places. And a lot of the disturbingly high number of people who are in the film actually have been forced to move or want to move or are saying, we're going to walk away from our property. I mean, one of the very first people I interviewed down in Texas, who I have to, their names have to be, they're anonymous because they were in the middle of a lawsuit. They had a four-house Texas ranch-style compound where they had built four of these, they built them by hand, took them 30 years, and built all the furniture and the wainscoting and had an inlay of the Lone Star in the floor that was then mirrored in an inlay in the ceiling. This is how intricate.
I was born in Texas.
Well, okay. So you know what I'm talking about. And they had planned that for their children and for their retirement. And they had a smokehouse and a place where the matron was going to give cooking lessons. They had to walk away from it because right down the road from them, they installed a mini refinery for natural gas. And the fumes coming off of there were making their skin break out in hives.
Wow.
They had hydrogen sulfide in the air, and they were getting rashes when they're doing their gardening and literally getting sick staying in their house. And there's no way that natural gas refinery was going to move. And here's the thing. These gas wells are not singular places. You might have one well, two wells, three wells, but then once it starts, you have pipelines everywhere, you have compressor stations everywhere, which are incredibly noisy, and you have these mini refineries that start popping up. And none of that stuff is regulated in terms of the air.
Right.
If this were to happen around here, this would no longer be a tourist area. This would no longer be a good place to live. This would be an industrial zone, and that's what's planned for it. Aside from the fact that yesterday or 2 days ago, I think the Susquehanna River started bubbling. Did you see that? It's bubbling with gas.
Which is
disturbing to think about that being the Delaware.
Well, it's more than it's absolutely disturbing, and it's also, again, what are the long-term effects of this? What does this mean? If we lose our water, which is such a precious resource, a limited resource, both in the United States and throughout the world, what does that mean? What does that mean
for all
of us? And it's bad news.
Yeah. Right? You have to trust the environment you live in, right? You have to trust that your home is healthy, that your environment's healthy. Now, if three or five people in this area, if they do the drilling, get this kind of chemicals in their water, bad water, then all of a sudden you have no trust in your living environment anymore. When I go to stay with people, you know, I was staying out in western Pennsylvania in Steph Halowich's house, and I get in the guest room, and I can feel my sinuses burning because they're living right across from wells and a compressor station, and the air is, they've shown that the air has benzene in it, and I know what I'm breathing. I'm not comfortable there. If I go visit with John Fenton, you know, I'm not going to not take a shower, you know, even though I don't really feel safe doing that. But they're taking showers. And that's the thing. You're in that same boat together.
Right.
But you don't trust the water. You know that there's something wrong with it. And if you had continuing exposure to that, you'd be in trouble. So it's not, I don't even think it's about long term. I think it's here it comes, the hammer comes down, and then all of a sudden, within a very short period of time, the place is laid waste. I mean, they only started drilling in Dimock in 2008.
I know,
in a real way.
Very short amount of time, people getting asthma attacks in their homes, rashes. Again, we're talking about exactly the immediate impacts, and then who knows what the long-term ones are. So what would you say? Well, first of all, I want to say with your film Gasland, which I find really incredible, is that in real time now, this film is in the middle of a movement because we're fighting to protect our lives, our homes, our communities, the environment with this unsafe gas drilling. And so your film is right in the middle of that debate, which is quite amazing. It's not a film that was made looking back on something. It's a movie that you made while it's happening.
Well, like I said, you know, when I'd heard from the Damascus Citizens, and I got, you know, like, well, what's really the story? What's really the truth here?
Right.
Is this really how it is? You know, and I went out to Dimock and got completely shocked that it was actually worse than they were saying.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to know, all right, being the skeptic, you know,
yeah.
is this as bad in the rest of the country as it is in Dimock? And then I found that it was actually worse in places where there had been longer development.
Right.
So this just kept getting worse and worse. Then I ended up at the EPA with Weston Wilson, who told me a little bit about how that was covered up during the Bush administration. And all the investigations that the EPA were trying to start were shut down by the Bush administration. And then it was like, all right, well, and I, you know, and got home with some of the footage and said, well, I don't know what to do here. What am I making? And friends just jaws hitting the floor going, you have the inconvenient truth on your hands. You've got to do this. This is the priority. I said, I know it's a priority because I'm going to lose my house. I'm going to lose everything that I know of home, you know, and I don't want to see that happen. So once the information was clear, it was always here we are. We have to tell this to people. I don't tell them what to think. I never say what people should do in the film. At all. I leave it up to them, which I think is, I just wouldn't, that's, it's a piece of art, even though it's a documentary, it's a piece of art. You ask the questions, you don't necessarily want to give the answers. The answers are out there. I think we're all trying to figure out the answers in these kinds of things today, you know, like with all these people, oh my God, more and more people
are showing up. I know, more and more people are showing up, you know, they're coming because it's true. It's looking for answers. It's getting informed. It's sharing information, sharing the stories of what we've witnessed, because I think there's a role of being a witness, as you talk about what keeps you going, as exhausting as it is. But
well, you're a documentarian, right, in a way. In the same kind of a way.
Yeah.
By talking to people and asking them for their stories. I mean, and it evolves. My understanding of this evolves constantly because I'm learning things when I go to Washington, D.C. I learn things when I find out how this is operating, how this political process is operating. All I know is that if this doesn't get stopped, we are going to lose this area and we will not be the same and it will never be the same again. And all of the things that are wonderful about it will be in deep trouble. So but then the question is, well, where are you going to go? I think you have to stay.
Yes.
You have to stay and fight.
Stay and fight. You mentioned home. My guest is Josh Fox. You mentioned home and you're fighting to protect your home and to prevent the loss of it. What does home represent to you?
Well, you know, this is what's really strange, is that that definition has become bigger and bigger and bigger.
Mm.
Because you go enough times around America, it's sort of like, oh, I'm in Albuquerque. It's sort of like going down to the corner store or something. You know, oh, I'm in Fort Worth. Oh, I'm back in Paonia, Colorado, you know. And that becomes a big backyard, you know. So in a way, it's not in my backyard, and the backyard is the United States. And the backyard is going to be Australia. We're going to go to Australia. You know, I'm going, they're opening the film in Australia. I'm going down there for 2 weeks. And so what's home, you know?
Right.
Home during the thing was my, you know, the front seat of the 92 Camry, you know. But I know what home is when I walk in the door. You know, it's the way that it smells. And it's the sound of the way the door sounds when you walk in and you realize and you sit there and then something inside of you just releases and you're like, I'm home, you know, and that's the deal when and that is, you know, that's really precious, you know, because nowadays everything is so transient and you're constantly on. I'm constantly on the move. But that's it. And I walk in there and it's, you know, especially if I'm there by, if I walk in there by myself some for some reason, you know, there's time to think it through. You're not rushing in with other people and your focus is on them. When I walk in the door of my house, I open the door, I can hear that sound and the smell, you know, and then walking down to the stream or in the woods, you know, that's. Or even just driving down 97 or whatever.
Right, Route 97
Or the bridge, the Skinner's Falls Bridge, which used to be blue. Not a lot of people know that.
Oh, it did.
In the 70s, it was blue.
And this is the bridge that is the connection between New York, Catskills, right here, just up the road, and Pennsylvania. You cross over the Delaware River. Well, Josh, what was the closest body of water to you when you were growing up?
The stream.
It was.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And what did that... Well, you know,
it's the most primal thing that there is, I think, you know, because that's the playground, that's the science laboratory, that's the place to go swimming, the place to Ramsey Adams left his glasses here. You know, the stream is the place where you have the three or four fish that you know that you really want to get. you can't get them. But, you know, these are things that happen before, I guess, you have any language. So they're hard to really explain. But I thought
so deep inside you.
Well,
then.
Matt Sanchez did most of the photography down the stream. Most of those shots are his because I was just too overwhelmed. Like I shot. But he was the one, he captured all the detail. I was trying to get everything in one shot. You know what I mean? He found these whirlpools and that rock and this tree branch and this piece of rain and that thing. And so most of that stuff in the film is actually his. And I was incredibly happy with the way he captured that because
he was able to translate.
He was able to translate.
In a way, translate.
He could see it because it's his.
Right.
He was an outsider.
Could see what that is.
One thing that we need right now is an absolute commitment on behalf of the people who are concerned about this, who know the truth about this, to stand and fight and do what they need to do and do everything they can do. Because, you know, across the country, people are rooting for the Delaware River Basin. And they're rooting for New York. They wanted that New York moratorium because they said, look, we can point to that. New York said no. Well, wait, maybe we can say no too.
Thank you so much, Josh.
You're welcome.
It's so great.
It's really good to be here with you.
That's so good to have you sitting here at the kitchen table.
I love it. I love it. I'm coming back.
From the kitchen table out on the road, I'm Sabrina Artel. Trailer Talk gratefully acknowledges the Park Foundation, the New York State Council on the Arts, and the Puffin Foundation for the generous support of our work. And special thanks to the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance in Narrowsburg, New York. To find out more about the Marcellus Shale Water Project, please go to www.trailertalk.net. To find out more about Josh Fox, the movie Gasland, and his theater company, the International Wow Company, please go to GaslandTheMovie.com.
Thanks for joining me for Sabrina Artel's Trailer Talk. The music for the show, Patti Smith, People Have the Power. Trailer Talk is produced by Sabrina Artel. For more information, please visit trailertalk.net. Special thanks to WJFF Radio Catskill and the numerous people who have donated their time, resources, and conversations to make Trailer Talk possible. Thank you all who joined me in these conversations. I'm Sabrina Artel. Safe travels.